Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Ross Dellinger, Yahoo Sports, has been all over the college football playoff meetings and this tumultuous time in college athletics. Ross, thanks for joining us. Just kind of take the temperature. You know, you're at the CFP meetings. What's the mood there?
Yeah, it was the first meeting where they met like in person since the new CFP deal was agreed to with the unequal revenue share and all the drama that surrounded the format and the structure. So, you know what? It was jovial, though. It really was. In fact, we, as media, there were two or three of us there, and we sit right outside of the room, and every now and then we can hear something. I mean, we can't make out anything, but there were laughs. You know, we could hear laughing and chuckling in the room, so it was pretty jovial. Greg Sankey and Jim Phillips, they talked afterward. They were the main two that talked afterward. And, you know, they didn't really make any huge decisions, right? And they weren't supposed to. The biggest decision they made was the Army-Navy situation. But outside of that, they really didn't make any big decisions. But it seemed like a jovial room, and everybody kind of got along. So it was good. It was Bill Hancock's last – It was his last hurrah. He's retiring, and it was Mike Oresko's last hurrah as well.
When you know, we think about Hancock, I mean, he goes way back, and when you think about his tenure, how different will the next phase feel with someone else in charge, or will there be a difference, or maybe there will be because just the format's different?
Yeah, there definitely will be a difference. You know, Bill is a very unique individual. He's incredibly like warm and kind and talkative to the media and always caters to people. And not to say that Rich Clark or the next director will not be that way, but I think Bill is just a unique guy in that. And so it'll be a little different. But let's be real, right? The people with authority within the CFP is not the director, you know, and that's just the fact. And it's really never been the director, and it's definitely not the director right now. As college sports evolves, you know, the two leagues obviously and two commissioners have gained more and more authority in power, and I think that's the case. So the real questions are around SEC and Big Ten in their commissioners and their leagues and what they want, because those are the real drivers of everything.
You had some great reporting on kind of, you know, the 11th hour there, and Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti of the Big Ten, you know, forming that working group that they formed right in front of the meetings. You know, tell us what you learned there. How close were the Big Ten and SEC from taking the ball and going home?
Well, you know, through the course of that six-week stretch, it was pretty crazy six-week stretch. It was about early February to mid-March is where when negotiations for the new CFP deal were had. And following it and reporting on it bit by bit, week by week, was pretty wild. And I think what really emerged during that time was that the SEC and Big Ten were asking for a lot, and they were being very aggressive when it came to format, revenue structure, and voting rights. And in the end, we saw that aggression in the numbers. And I wanted to provide some context around what happened and why the numbers came out like they did, where SEC and Big Ten are getting almost basically two-thirds of the revenue, right around 60% or so of the revenue combined, and how that happened. And, you know, a big part of it happened because of obviously the realignment and the fact that there's no fifth power league anymore. And they use that, I think, to their advantage. And to get back to your question, to me, in my mind, I don't think there was any doubt that they would have left. They probably would have taken Notre Dame with them. do, and they would have done something something different. During the course of negotiations, while reporting it live, I was skeptical, but afterward, especially the comments from the two commissioners, I think, and some of the other things I just found out in that behind-the-scenes kind of reporting after it all was done, was that they would have done that if it didn't, if the format and the revenue structure didn't meet their wishes. And that would have obviously been a blow for college football, but it probably explains why there are the gaps that there are in the revenue in the New Deal.
Ross Dellinger, Yahoo Sports, has been all over the CFP stuff. I was told there was a provision in the deal that provided maybe for the event of, you know, the collapse of the ACC or some further realignment, meaning that, you know, the teams would take whatever revenue that they've currently been slotted, they would take that to their new leagues. Is that your understanding? If the ACC, you know, let's just say things go sideways with the lawsuits, if the ACC breaks up, it doesn't cause a massive reform to the CFP, does it?
There is a provision in there. From what I understand, it was driven by Brett Yormark of the Big 12, and it's called a look-in provision. And a lot of deals have them, and the look-in provision can be triggered after the 2027 playoffs. So 4 years from now, 2 years into the new deal, it can be triggered and by any power league. And when it's triggered, it'll be a reevaluation of the revenue structure, maybe even the format too, but specifically the revenue structure. And it'll be based on performance, just like the revenue structure was based on the performance of the previous 10 years and the participation in the CFP. I think they'll look at the last four in any look-in provision. And then to get what you're talking about more so, right, the look-in provision also includes kind of an automatic trigger if there's, like, meaningful conference realignment, right? And that is certainly, you would think, in there, given the ACC's situation with Florida State and Clemson trying to exit the league. So if your two biggest brand football brands exit the league, do you deserve 17% of the revenue distribution, which is more than the Big 12 is getting? I think that would be a question asked then. So, yeah, that look-in is certainly an interesting provision, and a lot of it does have to do with the ACC situation.
Wild stuff. One of the quotes that came out of these meetings, you know, I'm not sure it was you or somebody else who I saw it on Twitter, that, you know, there wasn't room for five. There might not be room for four. How many power conferences is there room for in your mind as you talk with people?
Yeah, that was in my kind of behind-the-scenes story. It was a quote from a high-ranking figure, who said, we've seen, you know, that five Power Five conferences can't exist. Four cannot either. And three is the number. And I talked to some economists actually for that story, and they see the same, right? Given the amount of teams and such, three leagues is probably the more ideal situation. Andy Schwartz is a sports economist. He mentioned that. He said that he believes there'll be three 20-team leagues, something like that, in the future. And you got to think, given the ACC situation, that would maybe be the Big 12, Big 10, and SEC.
It's interesting because I talked to Oregon's president this week, and you know, he seemed to think, as they made their decision to go to the Big 12, that it was like a 10-year, 20-year thing, and the picture's becoming clear that, you know, they were seeing this stuff on the horizon as well. How much of this is a surprise in the industry? And I know a lot of fans are surprised by what they see going on and the collapse of the Pac-12, but how much of it to the commissioners and your sources, how surprised were they, or were they talking about this stuff 2 and 3 years ago?
I think it just depends who you ask. I do think there are folks that still are trying to wrap their mind around it, even within the industry, and are a little shocked that it did happen. So it kind of depends. But you know, as we're seeing now, you know, there's more predictions, right, being made for the future, in that we're going to get down to three power leagues. So we'll see how that goes. As I said, I think on a radio interview not too long ago, you know, the Clemson and Florida State are not returning to the ACC. You know, the ship has sailed. How they leave is just the question, but they're leaving. They're not coming back. And you got to think about what impact that will have, and will that trigger other moves from the ACC, just like we saw in the Pac-12.
All right, last question here, and I know you're going to go skiing today. And, you know, as I think about this, I'm thinking about schools that may be on that bubble or schools that want to be part of it, like Oregon State and Washington State. What can these schools do, if anything, in the next cycle to position themselves to be included? And I'm even thinking about some SEC and Big Ten schools that might not fit.
Well, I think Oregon State and Washington State, and I did talk to Teresa Gould, the new Pac-12 commissioner in Dallas. And, you know, we discussed the future a little bit, and we had discussed in a phone call, too, a few weeks ago. I think Oregon State and Washington State are being patient and watching the landscape, specifically with the ACC. I think that's noteworthy that they are looking at how more conference realignment from the East Coast will impact them. You know, does that mean when Clemson, Florida State leaves, two or three other ACC teams leave, and the ACC needs to expand again, and they look westward at adding the two more West Coast teams to kind of have like a westward flank? Maybe that's a possibility. You know, but they're being patient, which I think is the right move. But they do have a pressure point, right? They can only last two more years, or are considered an FBS conference for two more years during this grace period. You know, by 2027, they got to get to eight members or seven members to be considered an FBS. So there's a lot of avenues they could go. I think right now they're being patient, and there is definitely a watchful eye out for what happens in the ACC.
How good a skier are you? You grow up on the mountain?
No. I am. I'm a southern boy from the Gulf Coast. I did not ever ski until 3 years ago. And I fell in love with it. And so this is just my third winter of skiing, but I've gotten pretty obsessed with it, actually. It's a blast. So try to get it in when I can, because I can only ski basically from January to April because of college football schedule, like, you know, mid-January through April. So trying to get it in.
All right. Have a safe trip up the mountain. Appreciate you, man. Thank you.
All right, John. Thank you.
All right. Take care. There he goes, Ross Dellinger down the mountain. You heard it there, Oregon State, Washington State being patient. That dovetails with a lot of the stuff we've talked about on this show. Certainly the laughter coming from within that room. I don't know. Not a lot of laughter in the last 8 months from other parts of the country, and some of the footprints and some of the campuses that are even included in the Big 12 and the ACC have to be nervous when they hear about, you know, contraction down to three. Will it include everybody? What happens to everybody who gets left out? Can Oregon State and Washington State buy their way back in? Can they punch their way back in? We'll talk about all that coming up. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the bald-faced truth.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth radio show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth radio show. Thanks for listening.